702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
It's coming up to 8 minutes past to 6 o'clock. Ray in for Bruce on The Money Show, which is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking. The bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. Now, that's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Well, coming up on your program in the next hour, talking shortly to SARS Commissioner Edward Kiswetter, discussing where SARS is today after it became the centre of state capture. We saw that with that report that came out this week. Lord Peter Hain has asked the UK government to freeze all contracts with Bain & Company. So you say to yourself, who's Bain & Company? Well, that's the company at the centre of dismantling SARS. I'll be chatting to Lord Peter Hain a little bit later on. I'll also have your market news as well. And then later in the programme, it's time for the Brutal Biz Quiz, your chance to be the champion of The Money Show. That's where I ask a series of questions, and if you are the last person standing, you then become the champion of The Money Show. It's that easy. So I hope you have been listening this week. In fact, if you just listen tonight, most of the clues are right there. I'd like to hear from you, though. You can leave an SMS on 31702 or 31567. You can also leave a WhatsApp, a voice note on 072-702-1702.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So it's been one of the main stories of the week. The State Capture Commission has released part one of its report and has a special section just for the SA Revenue Service. It's found that former Commissioner Tom Moyane at the time needed to be, he needs to be prosecuted for lying to Parliament. The Commission also singled out management company Bain & Co. for helping to dismantle SARS. So where does this leave the revenue collector? That's the big thing. Where exactly does it leave them? Now, think about what has come out with this the State Capture Commission report. There has been a lot with it, because if you go back to 2006, I think it was 2008, round about there, SARS was seen as one of the, I suppose the most forthright revenue collectors in the country. It was this absolutely awesome revenue collector, well, not in the country, in the world, actually. And a lot of former SARS employees have basically said that. They've said that, you know, we have a situation now where we used to be this wonderful tax collector, and now, well, you know, things have changed. So what happened then? Tom Moyane, he came along. Right, he came along and he then started to dismantle SARS. Former President Jacob Zuma, at that point, he was involved in that as well. A lot of people have said, and it actually came out in the State Capture Commission of Inquiry Report, Section 1, saying that the reason why SARS was dismantled, because it was to allow for criminal activity. So you had all these elite units, these units that were dealing with corporate tax, where people were evading tax, people were hiding money. There was also the illicit cigarette trade as well. That was the big problem. And basically what happened at the end of the day, it just got worse and worse and worse, because certain people were taken out. You'll hear later on in the best bits of The Money Show, you'll hear later on where we spoke to Johan van Lochrenberg. Now, he was part of the executive, and his job was to basically have a look at tax evaders and close those loopholes. But then you had those cigarette companies who came along, the illicit cigarettes, those ones you go buy in the street corner that you shouldn't. They were evading tax, and he decided to go after them and other companies as well. And what happened then, it just got worse and worse and worse. And that was the big problem. So eventually, they had the SARS rogue unit. Now, this rogue unit was a narrative was created where you had within the Sunday Times newspaper, and yes, I know they have apologized, but you had these narratives created, and basically all the top executives then left SARS. So where does this leave SARS now? On the line is Commissioner Edward Kiswetter. Hi, Commissioner. Good evening. Welcome to 702 and Cape Talk.
Thank you, Ray. And Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back on. Commissioner, with the release of this report, do you think that the State Capture Commission covered all the areas of concern when it comes to SARS? Because you had to pick up the ball and run with it. What are your thoughts on what you've read so far?
Well, you know, you will recall that the Nugent Commission was specifically instituted by the President to look at the damage and the decline of SARS, and those recommendations we have substantively implemented. The scope of Zonda was obviously wider, but the sobering message for South Africans arising out of the Zonda report is not only was SARS one of the institutions that was captured, the capture of SARS was central to the entire project of state capture. And when one looks at the first volume, the name SARS appears over 350 times. And it shows you that the various points of connection, nexus points, whereas the Nugent report focused on the damage within SARS, the Zonda report also triggers a whole lot of other questions that speak to where SARS may have to investigate, because individuals implicated elsewhere in the broader state capture project may also have a case to answer in terms of tax obligations. Yeah. And so we are looking at the report in more detail, but the early indication is that we will have an arm's length of work, a raft of additional investigative projects that will arise from the report, which we are ready to pursue.
Commissioner, I started out just hearing you say that. I mean, I started out by saying that there was, say, for instance, the illicit cigarette trade and others as well. And you will see in that report, it says that SARS was weakened to promote criminality. Just expand a little bit on what you've just said. Now, what happens next? Because you've had to tighten everything up. You've had to rebuild some of your units. But what happens now?
So I think what was very important, Ray, was not to merely do a checklist approach and respond to each of these recommendations, but to step back and understand what the systemic weaknesses are that have rendered the organization helpless and also rendered the organization susceptible to the kind of infiltration that we have seen, the manipulation of refunds, the manipulation of the marginalization and neutralization of key employees, the reorganization of capabilities that are world-class and follow best practices. So what one had to do, and certainly the project that I assumed in May 2019, was to zoom out and say, how do we strengthen from an overall strategic and systemic perspective the institution so that it is no longer in a position where one person can use it as his or own enterprise to serve a narrow and specifically a corrupt purpose, as we have seen. And what that means is to, instead of building, leaders, that's what we call system. Instead of reinstituting transactional manner governance structures, one has to look at the overall integrity and value system that underpins it. At the end of the day, no amount of restructuring, no amount of policies and regulations can mitigate a poor value system and a lack of integrity in human beings.
Yeah. I remember reading the other night when the report first came out, and I just fast-forwarded straight to SARS, and there is a section in that report where it says he ran it like it was his own, Tom Uyane. He ran it like it belonged to him. And you are right, because you can never have that again, because SARS belongs to the country. It belongs to the people of the country. It generates the income, the revenue to fix things, to provide things. That's why we pay our taxes.
Absolutely. And so I think the Nugent Commission would be aligned with the conclusion that the Zonda report says that there is clear evidence of a corrupt intent. And if one follows the narrative, one has to ask a number of questions. The first is, how is it that a candidate is aware of his or her appointment well ahead of the process of recruitment being started?
Mm.
It makes a sham of that process. Secondly, how is a service provider aware that they would be appointed well ahead of the procurement process? And in the case of Bain, unapologetically, one must report that there is clear evidence supported by the Commission's report that this was an irregular procurement process, appointing a service provider who had no experience to do work that was not required and implementing a plan that was preconceived. Now, that says, in addition to the civil claim which we instituted, which has resulted in the recovery of fees that Bain had earned, we have also handed over our file to the investigative authorities for consideration for criminal prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
And Bain is not the only entity. There are other entities that all would have to answer to the broader impact that they've had on the state capture project.
That actually leads me to my next question. Now, we've also been covering SAA, and a lot of people have come forward to say Dudu Mnyeni is not the only person who should be prosecuted. Commissioner, are there still people within SARS that need to be investigated, still people who are working now who must be worried about their futures? Because after what's happened to the State Capture Commission, are you going to be taking a closer look at them?
We've done a number of things, right? I mean, no one puts up their hand and says, oh, by the way, I was part of this, corrupt cabal.
Yeah.
People go under the woods. All of a sudden, I let me say this tongue-in-cheek, it's like you can't find anyone now who supported the apartheid government.
Yeah.
So similarly, you won't find anyone who supported the former commission. What we have done since I rejoined was to identify a number of individuals who were implicated by name to have either been complicit or at least compliant in support of the project of capturing SARS.
Right.
We have dealt with all of them. They have taken leave of the organization on various terms. We are dealing with one more outstanding matter where an individual has taken us to the CCMA, lost the case, and it's a matter that may now go to the courts. But we are confident that the action we've taken, not only in taking leave of these individuals who are part of the executive, but also sent a clear message into the organization that we will not tolerate that.
Yeah.
The second thing we have done was to work closely with the top leadership, the so-called top 70 leaders in the SARS, and to say to them, I have no reason to not include you in the rebuilding of SARS. And until such time there is reason, I'm going to make the positive assumption that that you will work with me. I will do a few things. Firstly, make sure that you're deployed into
We're starting to lose you a little bit, Commissioner, at the moment. I think we're going to leave it there, actually, Commissioner, at the SA Revenue Service, Edward Kiswetter. So many questions still, but it does look like SARS has cleaned house and they have dealt with those who are, who are complicit or who were complicit in what happened with state capture. But like I say, with SAA, with others as well, it's sort of a process of weeding out those who were responsible and having them prosecuted as well.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Let's stay with the story now. And you heard the commissioner speaking about Bain and Company. Well, former British MP and anti-apartheid activist Peter Hain has called on the UK government to freeze all contracts with US-based consultancy firm Bain and Company. This is after the release of the state capture reports where Bain and Co. they were singled out for helping then SARS Commissioner Tom Oyane to dismantle SARS. That was their thing. They have paid back some of the money. They have done that. that, but it doesn't go far enough. Lord Peter Hain joins us now from the UK. Lord Peter Hain, hi. Welcome to The Money Show.
Hi, Ray. Pleasure to be with you.
Good to have you on. How big is Bain & Co. in the UK?
It's pretty big. It's done multi-million contracts for the British government, for example, 30 million, 30 million. So you multiply by 20, that's around about 600 million RONT contract for the Cabinet Office, including advising on Brexit. So it's a multi-million operator in the UK, not just for the public sector doing things for the National Health Service and other parts of the public sector in Britain, but also, of course, the private sector. And because of the findings of the Zondo Commission, I think it's absolutely essential that Boris Johnson, and I've written to him asking him to do this, freezes all its work with government and withdraws its license to operate in the UK until the proceedings that the Zondo Commission has recommended are followed through and any prosecutions of Bain & Company result.
Surely the government, though, when it comes to Bain & Co., they would have seen what's happened in South Africa. They've been listed for a while now. We've had the State Capture Commission. This has gone on and gone on. Surely the UK government at some point would have asked questions for themselves.
Well, you would have thought so, but they haven't until it's been raised. You may remember that in late 2017, I first, in the House of Lords, raised the whole question of state capture under former President Zuma and the Gupta brothers. It hadn't been raised in the British Parliament before. It was only then that the British government started focusing upon it. And as a result of that, it took a bit of a long time. But a few years later, the Guptas and one of their associates was put on the UK's sanctions list to join the United States of America's sanctions list. So it's like drawing teeth, frankly. It hasn't been easy to get any action, but I will continue to press on this because, you see, Bain & Company, whilst it was a South African story, whilst the media in South Africa had exposed what was going on under former President Zuma and the Gupta brothers, and there were brave investigative journalists and in Amabungani and Scorpio and so on that did that, and you all reported it. That was a South African story that Bain & Company, KPMG, McKinsey, the rest of them that were caught up in this, earning massive fees for effectively being complicit with state capture. When it was confined to the South African political and media arena, they seemed to feel they could get away with it. Once I raised it, and I'm not taking any personal credit for this, I was asked to do so and supplied with the information to speak under parliamentary privilege. It then appeared on the front pages of the Financial Times in London and globally, of course, and also the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post. And suddenly, their global bosses started getting rattled. Mm. And so and came to see me and said, we're doing our best and blah, blah, blah. But you've got to hit them where it hurts. And their global reputations are very important to them. Now, this was an example where Bain & Company, as the Zondo Commission's made absolutely clear in detail, and I commend it for this, Bain & Company were up to their necks in corrupt practices in the South African Revenue Service in SARS. Now, what government should have anything to do with it across the world, including the British government, after that? That's the question I want asked in every country in the world. If we're ever going to get any redress on this, if we're ever going to get any money back for South African taxpayers from this massively damaging episode in the country's modern history, then you're going to need these global corporations who were involved in supping on from the gravy train. They're going to have to start hurting. And that can only be done by shining a spotlight on them internationally and by putting pressure on them globally in whatever countries they're operating.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that. And just thinking about that, if the company misbehaved here, not even just misbehaved, if they stole money here, didn't do what they did in South Africa, the same or similar could actually be playing out in the UK as well, because that's their work ethic.
Well, exactly. If they allowed it to happen, and not only allowed it to happen once or twice, but persistently, for year after year after year, in SARS and in other state-owned enterprises, it's been estimated by a whistleblower, Athol Williams, who I think has been very brave in giving evidence to the, and was commended by the Zondo Commission. He says about 2 billion rand in fees were earned by Bain & Company, just this one company, never mind all the others involved, the global corporates involved. Bain & Company, 2 billion rand in fees working for state-owned enterprises under Zuma. So I don't think it's a question of only paying back the 168 million rand they say they've paid back in respect of SARS. Whether that's been the case or not, I can't tell. But they say they paid it back. But there's another 2 billion to come.
Yeah,
They should be paying back as well. And they really got to start hurting. But you're absolutely right, especially in developing countries where they seem to think, these global corporates, that they can get away with things. This is a really serious issue. And as you say, Ray, if they've done it in South Africa, they could do it in the UK, they could do it in the United States of America, and any other country in the rich world as well as the developing world.
Let's hope that Boris Johnson does listen. Lord Peter Hain, thank you so much for joining us all the way from the UK.
The Money Show.
The markets.
Right, let's take a quick look at your markets. How did they close for the week? Well, the All Share was down about a third at 73,939 points. Angler up 1.7, AVI up about 1.4, 91, both sides. You know, they split into two, down 6 and 5% respectively. Karoo down about 5%, and then Industrials down over 1%. But not a bad week, though, for our JSE. And then looking at the Rand, 15.59 to the dollar, 21.16 to the pound, 1770 to the euro, gold $1,791.10, Brent crude oil $81.99. And in some other news, it's been revealed that Apple boss Tim Cook, his pay last year was 1,447 times that of the average employee at the tech giant. It just shows what he was earning. This was fueled by stock awards that helped him earn a total of nearly $100 million. In 2021, last year, the median pay for employees was just $68,254. So look at the difference. Now, Reuters is reporting that Cook, whose salary estimated to be about $3 million, also received $82.3 million in stock awards, $12 million for hitting Apple's targets, and $1.4 million for air travel, among others. So the next time that you ask your boss for an incentive, you just say, look what happened with Mr. Cook at Apple. He has basically made himself $100 million just in 1 year.
The Money Show is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. The bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Right, let's turn to business now. And the APSA Purchasing Managers Index is down. It lost 3.1 points in December to 54.1. So you think to yourself, okay, what's the PMI then? We'll get to that now. But also ties in with business activity, also down. New sales orders were down. And employment, the employment index, also recorded a rather significant decline. So you can see things aren't so rosy at the moment, put it that way. On the line is Mialani Moluleke. He's an economist at APSA. Good evening and welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening, Ray. Good evening to my show listeners. Good to be on the show.
Good to have you here. All right, so what's the overall... Okay, in fact, let's start with this. What is the PMI? Just sort of explain it to me like I'm a 10-year-old.
Right, so PMI is short for Purchasing Managers Index. And the APSA PMI specifically is a monthly survey of purchasing managers across the different subsectors of South Africa's manufacturing industry, where we asked them a few questions about what is happening to output, demand conditions or new source orders, what is happening to employment, what are their inventories looking like, amongst a few other things. We then sort of aggregate all of this information into the headline index, which we report as the PMI. In theory, the values of the PMI can range from 0 to 100. 50, we interpret as neutral. Values above 50 signal expansion, and values below 50 sort of indicate a contraction. So you find a lot of these PMI surveys across different economies, and their value rate is really is that they tend to come out quite quickly to give us a sense of what is happening to economic activity before we see a lot of the official data from Statistics South Africa, which, as you know, do tend to come out with a much longer release lag. So I hope I've succeeded in explaining it.
Oh, you have. The 10-year-old is happy. Thank you very much for that. Nice to just sort of put into layman's terms. Okay, so business activity is down, but it's not out. There is a little bit of expansion here and there. Mielani? Are you still with us?
I'm sorry, Ray. I just lost you for a bit.
I was just saying that, look, business confidence, we all know this. We all know that business confidence is down. We know what's happening with our local economy at the moment. But we're not out. There are sort of some green shoots in some areas.
Right. So again, Ray, it's a monthly survey. So, you know, it's always going to capture whatever happens in that particular month. And, you know, what we see in December is a bit of a weakening in momentum when compared with November. And of course, I mean, although the Omicron did hit us, we didn't see an escalation in lockdown restrictions here in South Africa. But I think that what did happen in December is that there may have been sort of a generalized loss of confidence that, of course, tends to come with uncertainty. And, of course, we had a lot of that in December. But I think also given how quickly we saw the fourth wave taking off here in South Africa, I think it's also possible that other factors such as, you know, workers perhaps having to stay away from work after testing positive may have also dampened momentum a little bit in December specifically.
So interesting that you say that with Omicron, that we are in a situation now where I was watching this morning and listened to Eyewitness News and many different people saying we are just lucky that it landed up this way. It could have been far worse. Does this perhaps mean now that the next time we see the PMI, we may see a different story?
Yeah, we're certainly hoping so, you know, and we're going to do the next survey a little bit later in January and we'll publish the results in February, and we're hopeful that given the clear signs that the worst of this Omicron wave seems to be behind us, you know, especially with the government coming out in late December to ease lockdown restrictions even further, which, as you'll remember, Ray, included, you know, the sort of scrapping of the curfew. So sectors such as the sort of restaurant space.
Oh, Mielani, are you still with us? Yep, there we go. Sorry, we lost you for a bit there. Carry on.
Yeah, sure. So the thing, I think, you know, the easing in the Omicron wave and the further relaxation of lockdown restrictions, I think, is something that could be a little bit supportive to some recovery, at least in January. The big uncertainty, Ray, is the fact that we're only now starting to see Omicron cases rise quite sharply around the world, and we don't really know at this stage, I mean, what that is going to do to the global economic outlook and supply chain conditions, as we've kind of seen, of course, over the last few months, where it's been quite tight.
Yeah, supply chain is major. That's the big thing, because we seem to be treating it differently in this country than, say, the UK, Italy and France. They're locking down there. The Netherlands locking down. We're just saying, well, it's not that bad, you know, we're fine. But that could still affect us in the long run.
Absolutely, because, I mean, we are just a small open economy. You know, we are quite strongly dependent on what happens across the rest of the world. And if you look at Europe in particular, Ray, I mean, it still accounts for about 20 to 25% of our exports. So if some of these policy responses, such as the tightening of lockdown, actually does weaken activity in those markets, that could have some indirect effects for us, even though we're not necessarily tightening things up yet. So I think it's quite key to watch what happens across Europe. I think China is also an important risk to watch. I mean, we've been seeing some signs that things are kind of weakening there. And it will also be interesting to see how China itself responds to this Omicron variant.
Yeah. Now, employment. The employment index recorded a rather significant decline. No surprises there. What have you noticed, though, with employment? Is it up or down, or is the graph just going down, down, and down? In other words, making us look worse because people aren't they just aren't getting jobs.
The employment story has been particularly disappointing here in South Africa. I think when you look at underlying economic activity, there has been a recovery, of course, from the depth of the hard lockdowns that we experienced in 2020. But interestingly enough, when you look at SSA data, you know, it's quite clear that bit of a recovery that we've seen through the course of last year has not really translated into job gains. You know, whether you look at the course of the labor force survey or the course of the employment statistics from Statistics South Africa, employment is actually down in the first three quarters of last year. And if you look at the manufacturing sector specifically, we actually see that in the first three quarters of last year, employment was down by about 12,000. So I think, you know, the signal that we are seeing from the latest PMI data as far as employment is concerned seems to suggest that, you know, we really should not be expecting a quick turnaround in terms of jobs in the sector over the short term.
Sure, that doesn't sound good whatsoever. Economist at APSA, Mielani Moluleke, thank you so much for coming onto The Money Show and also explaining it to us like we are 10-year-olds. I do appreciate that.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Right, we've been talking about Omicron, but there is an imminent threat by a virus to the South African wool, sheep and goat industries. It's called the PPR virus, and an urgent application has been launched now for an appropriate vaccine. We need to stop this PPR. On the line is Dr. Peter Oberum, who's a CEO and at AfriVet. Dr. Peter Oberum, hi, good evening. Welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening, Ray. Wonderful to talk to you. Thank you.
No, great to have you on. Describe this horrible virus.
Well, some of the old people like myself might have some background on what we call rinderpest. That's a disease of ruminants, mainly large ruminants like cattle and buffalo, that went through the country, or actually through our continent, in around about the 1900s and absolutely decimated the cattle and buffalo, African buffalo population. Now we're talking about a disease, Petipest ruminante, which is very similar, but attacks, and I think that's the right word to use, attacks small ruminants, cattle, sheep and goats.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's very similar.
The rinderpest. Yeah, the days of the rinderpest. But is there some sort of vaccination that you can give animals? I've seen some of the pictures and a sheep with these horrible growth, sort of purpley growth things on its mouth. Can you stop this?
Well, you know that the mortality is in the region of 80 or 90%. In other words, once the disease comes into an area, in particular, an area like South Africa where our animals are naive, we've never been exposed. That's very much like COVID, actually. It's a new disease in the sense of coming into South Africa. And people with respect to COVID, but the sheep and goats with respect to this disease are totally naive. They're totally susceptible. And I think it's important to talk about the importance of the sheep and goat industry to the country, first of all. No, there's something like 30 plus million sheep and goat in the country. There's 8,000 commercial farmers farming with sheep and goats.
Yeah.
And there are 35,000 workers involved. So it's a massive industry. But we slaughter something like 4.6 million animals, sheep and goats, formally through the formal system. And that's actually important because a lot of sheep and goats are in the informal sector and we don't have tallies around that.
Sure.
But this represents something like 160,000 tons of mutton, of which 60 million rands worth is exported. So it's really important.
Wow. It sounds it. It certainly sounds it. So how do we stop this then?
I'm sorry, I'm going to digress again a little.
But sure.
Sheep in particular produce wool, not only meat. And that industry, the clip every year is worth something like 5 billion rand. There's 6,000 commercial farmers involved in producing wool.
Yeah.
There's 4,000 communal farmers who produce 13% of that clip involved. So it's food, it's work, it's employment, and it's exports, i.e. forex for the country.
Doctor, you've certainly got our attention. You really have got our attention now. Again, how do we stop this? Because you think about the Karoo with sheep. You think about, well, South Africa, and you've described the extent of what we have in this country. Are we looking at a major catastrophe?
Yes, well, like Rinderpest, it wiped out the cattle of this country. It wiped out the buffalo, actually, of this country as well. And so we have the tools available in the world. We have the information available. But we need to be prepared. We need to sit producers together with the government and work on a strategy which says, okay, we require, first of all, proper diagnostic tests. They're available in the world. We require proper vaccines to ensure that our animals, just like with COVID again, are protected against death or infection and death in this particular case. And they're available, let's say, on a limited scale in the world. But our veterinary services need to acknowledge that this is a threat. They need to ensure that they allow and promote the use of these diagnostic tests from the point of view of surveillance in the country. You know, people walk across the Zimbabwe border. We know the disease has moved down from Central Africa and others, Congo, where animals were absolutely wiped out, hundreds of millions of dollars lost. And we know that this is moving down slowly. So we need to say, we acknowledge this. We are prepared to look at the diagnostic tests that are available. We're prepared to look at the vaccines, and there are some available in the rest of the world. But we need to have them go through the whole regulatory process.
In other words,
which sometimes can take 3 or 4 years and just say, look, we want these things approved in advance. We want them stockpiled maybe and ready and waiting for that.
Yeah, in other words, doctor, in other words, there's got to be a strategy. There's got to be an overall strategy that kind of says we're going to deal with this. And you know what, Dr. Peter Obram, CEO of AfriVet, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, because I must admit, nobody's actually heard of PPR virus, but looking at those pictures today, we know about foot and mouth disease, we know about other ailments as well, but this certainly does seem very serious.
Because some journeys are better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 7:02.
6 minutes to 7 o'clock. All right, it's time for that part of the show where we have a little bit of fun. It's the brutal biz quiz. And what I'm going to do is ask you, series of questions, and if you're the last person standing, you then will be the champion of the Money Show. The champion, in fact, on Monday, because Bruce is coming back on Monday. You can actually phone him up and said, Ray sent me, I'm the champion of the Money Show. So it's just to have a little bit of fun. But I do challenge you that you will not get the answers to the following questions. So question number one, as you dial on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567, I challenge you, you will not get the answer to it. Question number one, SARS, S-A-A, and which other topic or entity, you can call it an entity, form the basis of part one of the State Capture Commission of Inquiry report. There were three parts, in other words, to the first report. There were three parts. It dealt with SARS, SAA, and which other topic or perhaps entity? 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. I challenge you.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Right, it's the Brutal Biz Quiz. I'll be asking you a series of questions. If you are the last person standing, you are the champion of the Biz Quiz, or I think Bruce calls it the Whiz of the Biz Quiz. Either way, you will be the champion or the Whiz. So let's go to Fanyana. Hi, good evening, and what is the answer?
Good morning, sir, and all your listeners. So the answer to this question would be Bain & Co. Company.
No, it's not, I'm afraid. Sorry, Fanyana. No, it's not. But, you know, close, very close. The question is SARS, SAA, and which other topic or entity form the basis of part one of the said Capture Commission of Inquiry. So what they did is they investigated and they came out with a report on SARS, SAA. What was part three? Let's go to Ravi in Boksburg. Hi, Ravi.
Hi, would that be Eskom then?
No, not Eskom. Oh, no. I can't stump you on the first one. Come on, there were three entities, three things that they actually looked into. 011-883-0702. You've got a phone. See, a few people are WhatsApping in at the moment. I think I've got you. I think I've got you on the first question of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Will you be the Whiz? 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. So what he did, you see, the State Capture Commission of Inquiry, the Acting Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, he decided he would do part one, and it came out with three little bits to it. One was SAA, the other was SARS. Come, guys, I know you're going to get the other one. Sunday in Germiston. Hi, help me out here, Sunday. What is the answer?
It's Transnet.
No. Maybe I'm confusing you a little bit. Okay, let me give you a clue. The Guptas, they had a certain company, put it that way, and they like to get up first thing in the morning and, yes, go off to the SABC. There we go. Frank, help me out, yeah. Hi, Frank.
Yes, the answer is Bosasa.
No, it's not. Okay. I tell you what, if anybody gets the third part of this, you are going to be the Whiz of the Biz Quiz, the champion, the brain, the everything. All right, Julian Waterfall, help me out here.
Hi, good evening. Is it Transnet?
No, it's not. It's not. So when I say it's an entity, it was a company. It was a company that was running. And we used to get up first thing in the morning, and sometimes with your breakfast, you would read the... Okay, there we go. Robin in Four Ways.
Yes, is it Zuma and the Guptas?
Very close, Robin. But what was what was the thing they used to read? What was their... Oh, guys, I can't give it away. Dolores in Black Pan. I know it's going to be you, Dolores.
The New Age.
Thank you, Dolores. Yay. Thank you. Dolores, you are the Whiz. You are the Whiz of the Biz Quiz. Well done. Congratulations. What are you going to do with your business this weekend?
Read the report.
Lovely. There we go. Dolores in Black Pan, read the report. It is about 850 pages long. Yes, they did. They investigated SARS. They went into SARS as well, SAA, and then the New Age Business Breakfast. That was the other one that came out featuring the State Capture Commission report. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning on a breakfast. I'm looking forward to chatting to you, but it is just after 7 o'clock.